such a mystery.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high-society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want... Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own, his claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his real-life corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, you're Trumpness. You're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, "You're fired." This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber and épée. You've got to see it. That's why Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at a Connell Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming daily to an average of 97 countries. On RadioPower.org and White Rose Society, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, and who knows, maybe even reaching distant planets. Who knows? Who knows? With two different satellite signals up there. Welcome to our program. It's Friday. It's the first hour of our Friday program. Which is our Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 was the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He has since been reelected five times. He's the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
I am so glad to be able to share this Brunch with Bernie Friday with you. It's we get emails about it. Anyway, it's, you know, people love it. Our number, our telephone number, if you have any things you'd like to bring up with Congressman Bernie Sanders, is 1-866-889-8894, 1-866-889-8894. And Bernie, there's some new economic figures coming out. Actually, there have been a few come out over the last week or so, and I understand there's a few more ready. What's going on with the economy right now? What's your take?
Well, here's what. It's very interesting. If you listen to the Bush people, what they're saying, hey, folks, the economy is exploding. Things are going great. We're creating all kinds of wonderful jobs. Don't worry. Vote for me. If you look at the reality, what you're finding is almost uniquely in terms of post-recession recovery, you are seeing wages not going up, but are stagnant. In fact, we're seeing a slight decline in real inflation accounted for wages. And at the same time, you're seeing corporate profits zooming up. So almost all of the benefits of this recovery are going to the CEOs and the large corporations and not to the working people. And then the second question is, yes, it is good that we're creating jobs, but then we have to ask ourselves, what kind of jobs are we creating? And a study has come out which indicates, and this is really an important point because it is talking about long-term trends in America. The new jobs that are being created pay 21% less than the jobs that we are losing. And importantly, the number of new jobs that provide health care for workers are substantially less than the jobs that we are losing. We have a state like in California where, in fact, average wages have gone down by 40% in terms of new jobs versus jobs that are being lost.
Wow.
So what we're seeing is a trend that, yep, we are creating new jobs. Many of them are part-time. Many of them don't have health care, and wages are substantially less than the old jobs that we had, often in manufacturing or in information technology. Bottom line is, middle class is being squeezed in terms of wages, in terms of health care, in terms of the high cost of college education, certainly in terms of the kind of prices that people are now being forced to pay at the gas pump when they drive to work. So Bush is wondering, gee, why don't people like me when we're creating these jobs? Because he's not talking to real people.
Yeah, and would you agree with me that this didn't start with Bush, that number one, this goes back to Reagan's, the beginning of conservative economics being writ large in the United States, and it really picked up steam with Bill Clinton signing NAFTA and GATT?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, in fairness to Bush, this is has been a long-term trend. But what Bush is doing is accelerating the process, being right out there in front. And remember, Bush and his economic advisors have said, in so many words, outsourcing is good.
Yeah.
If a company can manufacture a product elsewhere, i.e. in China, where people are paid 25 or 30 cents an hour and go to jail if they stand up for their rights, if you can do that, go there. Basically, they're waving the green flag, get out of America and go there. And the result has been a disaster for middle-class America. So the important point here is that when you look at the economy, you have to look beyond just the number of jobs that are being created. And we still have lost many, many jobs under Bush, but the quality of the jobs.
Yeah, and at least under Reagan, under Bush 1, and under Bill Clinton, the intent, the purpose, the stated purpose, and the of the Commerce Department and the Labor Department, and the people who were running them, I mean, they really understood their missions. The Commerce Department, in large part, was to help American industry, and the Labor Department was to represent the interests of American labor. And in the Bush administration, uniquely, differently, I mean, you could say to some extent under Reagan, but not, it wasn't anywhere near as toxic as Elaine Chao. Under the Bush administration, uniquely now, we have a Labor Department who now sees its job as crushing organized labor, and we have a Commerce Department who now sees its job as serving multinational corporations at the expense of the interests of the workers of America.
I mean, it is so naked. It is so, I mean, the only thing you can give them credit for is they are absolutely 100% out front on it.
Yeah.
And their motto is, it is, if it is good for the wealthy, if it is good for large corporations, if it is good for those campaign contributors who are raising hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars apiece for the Bush campaign, if that's who it's good for, then that's what we're going to do. And the result is, and the middle class continues to be squeezed. People are working longer hours for lower wages. People are working two jobs, three jobs. People don't have health care. People don't have child care for their kids. People can't afford to send their kids to college. People in rural states, like the state of Vermont, who have got to get to work, are now paying 40% more for gas than they did at the beginning of this year. So Bush is having a hard time understanding why the American people are reacting so strongly against the current economic trends. He goes and he talks to his friends, and they say, hey, George, doing great, thank you. But if he goes out and talks to middle-class workers, they're going to tell him a very different story.
Yeah, which he never does, it seems.
And of course, he doesn't. That's correct. Yeah. He doesn't do that.
By the way, I should have mentioned at the top of the hour to our listeners, Congressman Sanders has to leave the program today. Normally, you're with us for the entire hour, but
right.
He has to leave at 12:40 today.
And you know what we're going to be talking about? I'm running near my office to talk about worker ownership.
Oh, great.
Tom, when we talk about The economy, and we talk about our disastrous trade policies, and we talk about corporate America selling out American workers. One of the antidotes to that, and we'll be talking about this this afternoon,
this is a speech you're
is
giving
to help employees own their own places of work. And in the state of Vermont, in Ohio, in a number of other states, we're seeing more and more movement toward that. We're seeing entrepreneurs, people who started their own business who are now retiring, are saying, look, rather than just selling this business, I want to sell it to my employees.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole lot to be said about employee ownership in terms of increased productivity, in terms of people feeling really good about themselves in making decisions for themselves rather than just being at the whim of somebody else.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's like the next logical step. Well, in some ways you could say it's the next logical step in the evolution of capitalism. On the other hand, it's something that they were doing in the 1700s. I mean, it's not a brand new idea.
We have some legislation in, but instead of giving corporate welfare, billions of dollars to companies who are throwing American workers out on the street, we might want to help businesses create a pattern by which employees can run their own places.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I just read one of the new biographies of Ben Franklin, and one of the first things he did when he took over his brother's printing business and then started his own to compete with another one was bring in a partner who was an employee, and very quickly gave the guy equity in the company. Brought in another guy, gave him equity in the company, and it worked out well. I mean, he ended up dominating the printing business in Philadelphia.
People have a sense of ownership. They feel better about their jobs. They're more productive, and they ain't going to be moving to China or Mexico.
Right, I agree. And to remind our listeners, our telephone number, you're going to have to get in here quick if you want to talk to Bernie, because he has to leave at 12:40 to give that speech at 12:45 Eastern Time, and right now it's 12:15, is 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, the Enron tapes are out. I'd like to play just a couple little clips for you. They total about 45 seconds here. And get your thoughts on this. They were required, these traders, they tape recorded their conversations so you could confirm that trades actually happened. And here's just a little bit of it here.
Burn, baby, burn. That's a beautiful thing.
That was when people were actually dying in California as a consequence of the fires that were also taking down power lines and jacking up energy prices.
California. He steals money from California to the tune of about...
Can we rephrase that?
Okay, he arbitrages the California market to the tune of $1 million to a day.
Yeah, Ken Lay, here's another one.
If you took down a steamer, how long would it take to get it back up?
Oh, it's not something you want to just be turning on and off every hour.
Yeah.
That way.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and shut her down?
And here's some guys talking about the impact on people.
Taking all the money back from you guys? All the money you guys stole from those poor grandmothers of California?
Yeah, Grandma Millie, man.
Yeah, now she wants her f***ing money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her ass, f***ing $250 a megawatt hour.
And apparently these guys thought this was real fun.
It'd be great. I'd love to see Ken Lay be Secretary of Energy.
Ken Lay, Secretary of Energy? I mean... Have we all gone mad? I mean, isn't this an example, Bernie, of what happens when the profit motive is put above the public good, particularly with things like public utilities?
Tom, that is clearly an understatement. That is really sick stuff. I mean, what these guys are talking about is the collapse of the Californian economy, massive, bankruptcies for small business people who couldn't pay their utility bills. And they're right. Yeah, a lot of grandmothers who didn't have much money saw a tremendous economic threat, and they're laughing about it. They're laughing about fires, which claim people's lives. I mean, it is really sick, and it's what happens when capitalism gets out of hand. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, it's. What can be done? I mean, what congressionally, for example, what can we as citizens do, and what's happening in Congress about doing? Is there any movement to, for example, I mean, here you've got power companies that basically have their hands around the throats of communities because they own the only power lines into the community. It's not like, everybody in their local neighborhood has a power station.
Issue here, I mean, it gets back to the whole business that we've been hearing for 20 years, and again, being accelerated under Bush, is the deregulation of everything in the world, including utilities. And the theory is that if everything is deregulated, competition is going to result in lower prices, and gee whiz, you're going to have a choice of 9 different electric companies, and if you study the issue for 25 hours a week, you're going to save money. I don't believe that at all. I think it is the government's responsibility to make sure that people get basic utilities at a reasonable rate and to make sure that the electricity is generated in an environmentally sound way. But as you heard from this clip, you have folks, and let's not forget that Enron had a huge sum of money. Ken Lay was a good old buddy of George Bush.
The largest lifetime contributor to Bush.
Well, there you go.
To this moment. To this moment.
That says a lot because Bush has a lot of big contributors.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I all of these things get back to the deepest possible political question. That is, what kind of society do we want to live in? What is the proper responsibility of government? What role should people be playing in our democratic society?
Yeah, amen. Well said. 20 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman and America's independent congressman. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We will be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans Council.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Why me, George? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the plagues that you've sown? Tell me, George, what did I ever do for a whiz kid like you to bring chaos to my home? Lord, help me, Jesus, we didn't vote for him, but we can't ignore him, I fear.
And welcome back. We didn't vote for him. Oh, he's using your name to advance his own game. This is Why Me, George, a new parody of Chris Christopherson's Why Me, now posted at BlueCanyonSatire.com, written and performed by Jim Turr. And I just had to get, I thought you'd appreciate that, Bernie. It's a
Tom, does that get on the radio much?
I doubt it, but it's, you know, hopefully.
I mean, one of the interesting things, given the war in Iraq, given the crisis in the economy, given the fact that, you know, Bush's disapproval rates are going way up, you don't hear too much on the radio.
Well, you do on this radio.
I know, on your station we do, but I wonder on commercial radio how much we hear of songs and music attacking the administration.
Well, Jim Turr's stuff over at www.BlueCanyonSatire is brilliant. He's got a parody of Laura Bush singing Get Saddam, Saddam. It sounds just like Doris Day, you know. It goes on and on. Anyhow, let's take some callers here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman. And this is Kevin in Tampa. Kevin has called before, Bernie. He's a regular in our chat room. And, Kevin, I believe you also have a son in Iraq right now.
Yeah, in Baghdad. In fact, I talked with Bernie about him a few weeks ago when
his
Humvee not being armored.
Yeah.
Bernie, I have a question that I don't know how much you can comment on. I don't know how much truth is behind my question. I mean, I'm true about it, but I mean the truth that I picked up off the Internet last night. I can't vouch for the source where I got this, but I can vouch for the source that led me to this article. And it was discussing Bush's searching for and hiring an attorney in relation to the Valerie Plame fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
And the article I read said that the reason he's doing this is that there are reports that several witnesses to the grand jury have testified that Karl Rove didn't start the idea about exposing her, but it came to his attention and he approved it, and that Bush knew about it and didn't try to stop it at all.
Yeah, have you
heard anything? Is there any?
Well, Carl, I've read the same stuff that you have, but I don't know any more than what I have read. I think that's out there. Whether it's true or not, we will find out. I can't tell you more than that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Kevin, for the call. Good to hear from you.
And, Kevin, good luck to your son in Iraq. I know this must be a difficult time for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he. I've already pushed the button here to move on to PaceCop and our next caller. I'm sorry, I don't have your name, caller.
Is this me?
Yeah, that's you.
This PaceCop from the chat room.
PaceCop from the chat room. Okay, great. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I want to ask Bernie about if he found out anything about the American Stasi checking to see who went to blackboxvoting.com site.
Oh, you're talking about the Secret Service coming after Bev Harris and wanting to know all the people who have looked at blackboxvoting.com.
Yeah.
Do you know about that, Bernie?
Tom, we talked about it, and why don't you refresh? And you sent me something, I think.
Yeah, I did.
What is the Yeah, why don't you speak on that for a minute?
Sure, yeah, because we just have a second here. The bottom line is that Bev Harris has been approached by the Secret Service under the provisions of the Patriot Act, and she now can't talk about it anymore because apparently, you know, like librarians, you know, you can't. And they have told her that they want the IP addresses, that is the information that can track back to the individual users of every single person.
That is an outrage.
Yeah, every single person on the internet who's looked at her website, and so I guess
that is off the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, well, we'll keep track on this, and you'll keep track on it. We'll keep our folks up to date. Mike in Florida, hang on. We'll get your call right after the break. 1-866-889-8894. Bernie Sanders, Tom Hartman, right back.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Just because. Because there's arsenic in the water. And just because there's mercury in the air. Just because the corporations run the White House. Don't mean he don't care.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. And Bernie, I know we've only got you for another 6.5 minutes here. We get a couple of calls. Mike in Florida is, I'm sorry, this is Leland in Santa Fe on this particular line, isn't it? Leland, welcome. You're on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Hey, Tom, Bernie, great to talk to you. I just wanted to bring up the issue of the upcoming draft. It's Senate Bill 89, I believe, and House Bill 163. I hope everybody takes a look at that fairly closely. It's 18 to 26. And also, everything is at the president's discretion. I've never seen anything so presidential in my life as the discretion that he has about whether or not people can get out for conscientious objector status and all the rest of the stuff that's in that bill. And I was actually wondering, Mr. Sanders, do you know whether or not that bill is likely to pass?
Okay, that bill certainly is not likely to pass within
that's
the coming
I saw there were no
months before
responses.
The election. Certainly that's the last thing in the world that they would do. On the other hand, I think everybody has heard of the decision made by the military to tell folks that if their term that they signed up for the military had expired, they're going to have to stay on longer if their regiment is going over to Iraq, which is going to disrupt the lives of God knows how many thousands and thousands of families. To answer your question, I don't think that for political reasons there will be any attempt to pass draft legislation before the election. Problem is that if we continue to have the kind of aggressive foreign policy that Bush has today, in the next 4 years, and they're running out of troops to fill those needs, who knows what might happen.
Yeah. The last piece I wrote for Common Dreams, it was up last week, I think Tuesday this week, was the choice this year in the elections is between empire and democracy. You know, which do we want? Mike in Florida. Sorry, I got you out of sequence there. You're on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, you're clearly,
okay, great.
Mike.
Yeah, just a quick question. It seems to me that that Governor Davis was dropped by the people of California. Old Rush Limbaugh referred to him as Grayout Davis. And the reason Mr. Schwarzenegger is in power now is one of those California budgetary concerns. It's kind of funny that you played those tapes on Enron.
Yeah, well, in fact, go ahead, Carl.
No question, but that those horrendous actions on the part of Enron caused massive disruption and political anger in California. And, you know, people took it out on Gray Davis. Yeah.
And, in fact, 6 months before Schwarzenegger announced he was running for governor, he had a private meeting with Ken Lay, of all people, and a number of other energy executives, and because there was this big lawsuit, this $9 billion lawsuit against them that apparently has been dropped in the state of California. I don't have all the details on that, but have been following.
One of the ironies in this whole thing, Tom, is that California has made some significant efforts to move forward in terms of sustainable energy.
Yeah,
and has made some real progress in that.
Yeah, and Schwarzenegger is supporting those to his benefit. You know, to his to salute him. Last question here before you go, Bernie. It's the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. I lived in Germany for a year, and even though I wasn't part of the Armed Forces at that time, I could get the AFN station on the, you know, on my car radio, and I used to just love to listen to get NPR and whatnot. For the last 10 years, they've been carrying the Rush Limbaugh show. It's beamed into Baghdad. When they were asked why do they carry it, the AFRTS, they were told this is part of the Defense Department, that it's based on popularity here in the States. You know, it's one of the most popular radio shows. So then the question was asked, well, more people listen to Howard Stern than listen to Rush Limbaugh, substantially more. Why isn't Howard Stern's show carried? And this is the verbatim answer that the Defense Department gave, quote, well, his, Stern's, issue is one of content that's not appropriate, end quote. The Defense Department has decided it's okay to run right, you know, to have Rush Limbaugh saying, this was just fraternity hazing, just like Skull and Bones, but it's not okay for Howard Stern to make jokes about sex. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is that more than, well, what we could say, what's going on is an outrage right on the surface, that you have people in Baghdad in trouble being inundated with the likes, sounds of Rush Limbaugh and his right-wing stuff and his insulting tone regarding what we did to the prisoners in Iraq. Clearly, if you want to be fair about it, we've got to have different points of view. Tom, I think it might be a good idea for you to get on that network as well.
I would work for that. Put in a good word for me, Bernie.
All right, we will.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact.
I know you've got to go. It's 20 minutes before the hour. I thank you so much for being with us today for our Brunch with Bernie segment.
Okay, look forward to talking to you next week.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And Congressman Sanders is off to give a speech now where he's talking about employee ownership, as he mentioned. So, moving right along, and if continuing, by the way, if you want to call about anything, it's Friday afternoon here, the 4th of June, day 312, since Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, was outed, and now the president has hired a criminal defense attorney. I don't know, did you see John Dean's piece on this? It's on commondreams.org today. I believe it was published first in one of the law sites, websites, Find Law, or one of them. Saying that this is a kind of a scary thing. This when the president has to hire a lawyer, it can be a very very scary thing. It can be a very dangerous thing. Of course, he was Nixon's lawyer, his White House counsel, and then ironically, I mean, he could talk secretly with Nixon, but ironically, it was Ken Starr who in two separate court cases, one against Hillary Clinton and the other against Bill Clinton, argued and won in court that the White House counsel communication with the president is not privileged because the lawyer for the White House works for we the people, not just for the president. And so a president has to hire his own private attorney. And, in that broadly, I would say I agree with Ken Starr. I just think it's incredibly ironic that now it's coming back to haunt George. And we see at the same time here, Capitol Hill Blue today, this article by Doug Thompson. Again, this, a publication for insiders in Washington, D.C. Bush's erratic behavior worries White House aides. Now, this is truly spooky. This is truly spooky. Let me just quote from Doug Thompson. President George W. Bush's increasingly erratic behavior and wide mood swings has the halls of the West Wing buzzing lately as aides privately express growing concern over their leader's state of mind. In meetings with top aides and administration officials, the president goes from quoting the Bible in one breath to obscene tantrums against the media, Democrats, and others that he classifies as enemies of the state. I should add, we've known since long before he was elected that George Bush loves to use profanity in private. In fact, it's hard for him to get through three or four sentences without the F word or the GD word in them. That's a lifelong thing. He does know how to control himself in public. But apparently now this is happening in the White House. Worried White House aides paint a back to Doug Thompson's article. Worried White House aides paint a portrait of a man on the edge, increasingly wary of those who disagree with him, and paranoid of a public that no longer trusts his policies in Iraq or at home. A longtime GOP political consultant with contacts at the White House said, quote, "It reminds me of the Nixon days. Everybody is an enemy. Everybody's out to get him. That's the mood over there," end quote. In interviews with a number of White House staffers who were willing to talk off the record, a picture of an administration under siege has emerged, led by a man who declares his decisions to be God's will, quote, end quote, and then tells aides to F blank, 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 over, quote, end quote, anyone they consider to be an opponent of the administration. Which, by the way, kind of lends credibility to the possibility that it was actually George W. Bush who ordered Joe Wilson be burned for writing that New York Times op-ed pointing out that George had lied to the nation and the world in his State of the Union address and knew that it was a lie because he had been corrected previously on two occasions about that information. And George Tenet knew it was a lie. Bush knew it. Everybody knew it was a lie about the uranium in Niger. At the time the State of the Union address was made, Wilson had the mendacity, the audacity, to point that out. How dare him? Anyhow, back to this article. Aides who raise questions quickly find themselves shut out of access to the president or other top advisors. Among top officials, Bush's inner circle is shrinking. Secretary of State Colin Powell has fallen out of favor because of his growing doubts about the administration's war against Iraq. Apparently, Powell is not being invited into the White House as often as in the past. In fact, it's interesting. Other reports that we've read in several different media indicate that Colin Powell is on a rampage. Now, I'm talking about mainstream media here, you know, that Colin Powell is on a rampage. He's been oddly, at the Department of Defense, not at the CIA. Because, of course, you know, Doug Feith and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld had set up their own little intelligence-gathering agency inside the DIA, or inside the Department of Defense, rather, separate from the DIA, to collect and vet information about Iraq from Chalabi's defectors and other sources so that they could present information to the president and whatnot, saying, you know, and perhaps even to the CIA. Saying, I mean, you know, what's the source of the CIA's phony information? It may have been Rumsfeld. It may have been Cheney. I mean, here's one of the theories about, you know, why has Tenet left when he left? Perhaps it was Dick Cheney. I mean, Dick Cheney was the guy who was feeding this information. He needed a fall guy. You know, he needed a fall guy very quickly. Well, and in fact, here, Doug Thompson in this article in Capitol Hill Blue says, when the director, this Tenet, challenged the president during a meeting on Wednesday. This would have been 2 days ago. The president cut him off by saying, quote, "That's it, George. I cannot abide disloyalty. I want your resignation, and I want it now." End quote. And, of course, he got it. Tenet was allowed to resign voluntarily, and Bush informed his shocked staff of the decision Thursday morning. One aide said the president actually described the decision to his staff as God's will. God may also be the reason Attorney General John Ashcroft, says Doug Thompson, the administration's lightning rod because of its questionable actions that critics argue threaten freedoms granted by the Constitution, remains part of the power elite. West Wing staffers call Bush and Ashcroft the Blues Brothers because they're on a mission from God. The Attorney General is tight with the president because of religion, says one aide. They both believe any action is justifiable in the name of God. Well, you know, so does Osama bin Laden. This is truly scary. The draft measure, one of our callers mentioned, Senate Bill 89 and House Resolution 168, currently sitting in the Committee for Armed Services, projecting legislation for spring of 2005 would make the draft operational June 15th. I agree with Bernie. This will not get voted on before November. But you can expect right after the elections, This thing is going to happen. They've also added a $28 million implementation for civil service. It's gone. It's over the top. The EPA is holding public hearings on proposed rules that spell out how its interstate pollution would work. Hey, you know, before I get to that, by the way, two quick things here. I have promised you every day one of these, and I want to continue with this. The first. Our President Bush, flip-flopper in chief, as it were, you know, our flip-flopper in chief. Yes, indeed, flip-flopper in chief. Another one of President Bush's flip-flops, Iraq funding. This budget director, Joshua Bolton, speaking on behalf of the president on February 2nd, 2004, we do not anticipate supplemental funding requests necessary for 2004. In other words, the Bush says we don't need any more money for 2004 for Iraq. All is well. And then Bush flip-flopped just a few months later, May 5th, quote, I am requesting that Congress establish a $25 billion contingency reserve fund for the coming fiscal year to meet all commitments to our troops. The great Bush flip-flopper will have one a day, maybe forever. I mean, the list is growing and growing and growing. It's absolutely incredible. And then we go to the, you know, what has vanished? What has vanished here? It's the, yes, the Republican 2000 platform. Yesterday, We pointed out that the GOP platform denounced rigged elections and specifically gerrymandering, and the Republicans have since embraced that. Now, the second in the outrageous assertions, shameless lies, and broken promises, this is by Maureen Farrell on BuzzFlash.com, of the GOP 2000 platform. The GOP 2000 platform accused the Clinton administration of alienating America's allies. This is a quote from the Republican platform. This is the document of this is where the party stands in this election and how the president's going to behave and all that. Quote, the arrogance, inconsistency, and unreliability of the administration's, this being the Clinton administration's, diplomacy have undermined American alliances, alienated friends, and emboldened our adversaries. That's what the platform said. Now the updates on that. April 2, 2001, the Handelsblatt, the German newspaper, Bush unilateralism risks alienating America's allies. Even Washington's European allies are losing confidence in cooperation with the United States. Another one, the Los Angeles Times, world casts a critical eye on Bush's style of democracy. Another one, May 8th, in the Age, the New York Times, by Thomas Friedman. I have never known a time in my life when America and its president were more hated around the world than today. This Thomas Friedman, the champion of conservative economics. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17. Call now. 800-505-1546.
The eastern United States is the scene of one of the largest insect events in the world. I'm Rich Lips, Earthwatch Radio. Cicadas are big brown bugs that spend most of their life underground. Some species emerge every year to reproduce. Others arrive in cycles that run several years. The largest group of all, known as Brood 10, comes up from underground only once every 17 years. When they arrive, everyone knows about it, and this is their year. Mike Raup is an entomologist at the University of Maryland who studies the Brood 10 insects. He says these cicadas are about an inch and a half long, and they're known for their huge populations.
We hear estimates anywhere from 100,000 to 1.5 million per acre. So these are enormous densities, and these are very large insects for those kinds of densities.
The range of the Brood 10 cicadas extends south from New Jersey to Georgia and as far west as Illinois. Raup says the 17 years they spend underground makes a lot of sense. No predator will live long enough to remember these insects and plan for their return, and Raup says coming out in huge numbers has its own benefits.
It becomes a safety in numbers game. By emerging in huge, huge numbers in any given location, the cicadas simply are far too abundant for any predator to consume them all.
Raup says predators do eat them, and the list of predators includes skunks and squirrels, fish, turtles, snakes, and birds. But the big brown bugs will still manage to produce billions of offspring. They'll be the generation of Brood 10 cicadas that will arrive 17 years from now. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane without worrying about the next maniac trying to pay me back just 'cause you're half insane. Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program here. Tom Hartman with you. The real story behind the jobs number. Why is there such a gulf between the administration saying, everything's fine with the economy, isn't it wonderful, look at, we're making new jobs, everything's great, you know, it's, things are cooking along, we're boogieing, and the, every survey taken of consumers and citizens that says... It doesn't seem like it to us. Well, here are five quick reasons. Fewer workers are getting affordable health care work, number one. Number two, good jobs are going overseas. Number three, sectors with good job growth are low wage, like Walmart. Number four, prices have risen for families while wages are stagnant. And number six, retirement is looking increasingly bleak for middle-class Americans. Let me just give you some real quick details on that. A majority of Detroit metro businesses, this is from the Detroit News on June 2nd, say they are considering cutting back on health care benefits in response to rising costs. Close to 75% of 205 senior-level executives surveyed last month by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce rank employee health insurance as unaffordable, 25% very unaffordable. In Cincinnati, they're talking about this is the worst market for job-seeking teens since 1948. Why? Well, because they're now competing with adults who are willing to work for jobs that typically were teenage summer jobs. The Houston Chronicle reports, money doesn't go far when you're making close to minimum wage. The issue is becoming even more pivotal because job growth in the country, home health aides, food preparation workers, security guards, cashiers, teachers' assistants, and nursing aides are some of the lowest paying, according to a February article in the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics Monthly Labor Review. And finally, retirees suffer from lost health insurance. Company-paid health insurance for retirees is becoming extinct. You know, federal law requires that if your company owes you a pension, that they pay it. It doesn't require that they pay you the health insurance, and retirees are getting cut off left and right. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law, and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
You might remember way back in ancient history, back in 2002, when George W. was posing as a corporate reformer. He puffed out his chest, focused his beady eyes right into the TV camera, and said that he was sending, quote, a clear message to every dishonest corporate leader. You will be exposed and you will be punished. Strong words. But as happens so often with W., he talks big but wilts when it comes to action. For example, one specific promise he's made repeatedly is that he'll get tough with corporate tax cheats. But an independent analysis of IRS data by experts at Syracuse University finds that there has been a sharp decline of such tax enforcement under Bush, with fewer audits, fewer prosecutions, and fewer penalties. During the last decade, IRS audits of the largest corporations have fallen almost by half, and the agency's enforcement focus in Bush's tenure has shifted from corporations and wealthy investors to you-know-who, us ordinary working stiffs. This comes at a time when corporate sharpies have created all sorts of new tax dodges, allowing these scofflaws to shrink their tax payments to historically low levels. The General Accounting Office reports that in the 4 years prior to Bush's term, 60% of large corporations paid no income taxes. Zero. Since then, George has steadily whacked at the corporate tax rate while also gouging new tax loopholes into the law at the behest of corporate lobbyists. His latest boondoggle is a special interest tax bill that slashes corporate taxes by another $170 billion, including special loopholes for TV and movie producers, liquor distillers, drug companies, and even Oldsmobile dealers. This is Jim Hightower saying, every dollar of taxes that they dodge is a dollar that we you-know-whos have to make up. These wealthy elite are shirking their responsibility to help maintain the society that makes their wealth possible.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from Athens, Greece. Leave it to Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels to create the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. Go to choicehotels.com to learn how to enter, and you could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. This is this is a big week in terms of anniversaries. Today is, I believe it's today, either today or tomorrow, is the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. We've got D-Day coming up tomorrow, the anniversary of D-Day. And of course, all this in the midst of our just having violently invaded Afghanistan and Iraq within the past 2.5 years to do that. And these things, you know, there's a lot of breast beating that goes on around World War II. Yeah, we had to take out Hitler. And yes, it was the terrible war. And the Taliban and Saddam and, you know, and George Bush yesterday in a speech compared what he did in Iraq with what Roosevelt did in World War II, which
That's the subject of a whole other discussion for a little later on. But you know, many of us who have been for many years advocates of nonviolence are very often confronted with difficult questions, honestly challenging and difficult questions, like what would you have done about Hitler and things like that. And I'm really pleased today that Dr. Peter Ackerman, who's one of the world's leading authorities on nonviolent conflict, using to overthrow dictators, confront military occupiers, and through tactics using nonviolent tactics, but tactics. I mean, nonviolence doesn't just mean being passive. Tactics such as non-cooperation, civil disobedience, strikes, boycotts, blockades, and mass demonstrations is with us. He's the founding chair of the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict in Washington, D.C., and the author with Jack Duvall of a new book called A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict. Dr. Ackerman, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Glad to have you on.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon.
I remember I was in the month of February 1986. I was in the Philippines. I was working with a Catholic priest by the name of Father Ben Carrion, who wrote a weekly article called Joke Only in the Manila Times, which was ostensibly a humor piece, but really was sharply barbed political stuff. And he was setting up a program for the children who were living in the garbage dumps there. And I was there on behalf of an international relief organization based in Germany called Kinder und Jugendhilfswerk Salem. And we were helping out his program and did for a number of years. And while I was there, Cardinal Sin, who Father Carrion had introduced me to, went on the radio and denounced Ferdinand Marcos. This must have been about the third week of February. And I was staying in a hotel on the main street in downtown Manila, and I'm the name of the district is escaping me at the moment, the name of the street, but it's the business district there. And one morning I woke up and looked out my window, and the next day I was supposed to fly back to the United States, and there must have been 50,000, 100,000 people on the streets, and they were carrying a coffin. And 2 days earlier, a day earlier, a jeep had chased down one of Marcos's outspoken political opponents. Four guys had jumped out, shot him. The license plate of the jeep had been tracked back to one of the people in the government, and the people power movement was taking over. And in fact, I couldn't. My flight back home was on Philippine Airlines. When I showed up at the airport, my seat had vanished. Because, in fact, it took me 4 days to get out of the Philippines, because for every single day for those 4 days on the Philippine Airlines, which was the only airline that would honor my ticket, all the seats had been taken by Marcos's buddies who were fleeing to Hawaii, which was the stopover point back to the United States that I was flying to. And I saw firsthand a nation taken over in a nonviolent fashion. And it was extraordinary, and it in many regards is still continuing to this day in the Philippines. What are your thoughts, number one, on what happened in February of 1986 in the Philippines, and number two, how common or uncommon that is around the world?
I think to answer the question, you have to ask the question that you're alluding to, which is what did the People Power Movement in the Philippines, the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, the Solidarity movement in Poland, the anti-Pinochet movement in Chile, the overthrow of Milosevic in Serbia, and even what happened in Tiananmen have in common. What they had in common was two things. One is a civilian movement that at one point recognized that a military or insurrection in and itself was not going to be a successful strategy, and they decided to restructured the way they wanted to fight back by using civilian-based tactics, including strikes, boycotts, mass protests, social and economic non-cooperation that you alluded to, with a common purpose. And that common purpose, and this is the key idea, which was to shake the foundations, or what we would call the pillars of support, a Marcos or a Botha in South Africa, or Jarosławski in Poland needed to stay in control.
Now the flip side is, though. Well, okay.
Finish
your sentence. I'm sorry.
And generally speaking, those pillars of support are the loyalty of the police and the military.
Right. And what I wanted to ask is, it seems that the conventional wisdom is you take on the government. I mean, you know, I remember the 1968 Democratic National Convention. I mean, I wasn't there. I was actually reporting it on the radio at the time. And some people, actually a very small number. I mean, it was really a riot that was started by the Chicago Police Department. But there were people there who thought the violence is the path. I mean, there was this. You know, I remember in the SDS there were people who thought the way to bring down a government is by violence. You've got to attack them. Find their weak points, attack them. Blah, blah, blah. And yet it seems that whenever violence is attempted, what it does is it solidifies and strengthens those very institutions that you're talking about. The police fall into line, and they all join, you know, psychologically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, whatever, with the government, even though they may have disagreed with it. The army falls into line, the political institutions fall into line, and the average person who really just wants to get on with their life is reactive, you know, in a negative way.
He tends to go indoors because he's afraid of the violence.
Right.
And I think that you've hit another key point here is that the reason why these people fall in line is because those trying to undertake a violent insurrection will first threaten the people who fall in line because they have to go through them to get to the center.
In other words, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's very low probability of occurring.
And this is what we just did in Iraq and what we just did in Afghanistan. I want to get to Tiananmen Square because the main reason you're on here is it's the anniversary of Tiananmen Square, and we wanted to talk about that. But the American people have really been sold this bill of goods by the Bush administration, and have bought it, and not just the Bush administration. I mean, this goes way back. I mean, the overthrow of our other CIA buddy Noriega, and you know, on and on and on it goes. Right? I mean, that the way to change a regime, the way to bring democracy to the world, the way to bring about a better way of life for people is to go in with guns. And it seems from what you're saying and what the International Center for Nonviolent Conflict has documented is that actually more often than not backfires.
It quite often does. I think that the lesson of Tiananmen, if we want to go right to that,
yes,
before, you know, I guess you run out of time, is that what propelled the violent reaction by the people who were in charge was the fact that it wasn't just what was going on in Tiananmen, but the protests had extended to over 340 cities around China. And this created considerable panic at the center. This was much more frightening to them than a few violent insurrectionists scattered around the country that they could take care of one by one.
In other words, it was the grassroots.
If you read the Tiananmen papers, which is this wonderful document that basically exposes the decision-making by the people at the center who basically decided on martial law, you'll understand it was the fact that this movement had spread so far and had the prospect of spreading even further, a nonviolent movement that really was frightening to them.
Yeah, the grassroots nature of it. The grassroots nature of it was the thing.
And correctly so, because all the movements, the difference between Serbia in 1995 when Milosevic was challenged and when he was thrown out without a shot being fired in 2000, is the movement in Serbia spread to 70 cities.
Yeah, I don't think most Americans realize that Milosevic was overthrown by nonviolence.
Not nonviolence in the ethical sense, by a civilian-based resistance that included,
yes,
major strikes, provocations of the nonviolent provocations of the local police, a major strike in their key coal mine, and ultimately a nonviolent movement on the parliament, which basically the police wouldn't stop and he had to leave power.
Yeah, you make a clear distinction in your book and in your literature about the difference between those who practice moral nonviolence or passivity or just absolute unwillingness to confront power and strategic nonviolence. Which can be a very, very, very active thing, up to the point of physically harming other people.
Now, the reason why you remain in you use strategic nonviolent resistance and you maintain nonviolent discipline is that you remember you want to co-opt or shred the loyalties of the key elements that an authoritarian needs to stay in power, whether it's the police, the military, the bureaucracy, key economic institutions, and you can't shred those loyalties of those people while threatening to kill them. Right. You're there to co-opt them.
As soon as you attack them, they consolidate.
Exactly. You understand precisely.
Yeah, yeah. I found one of the most fascinating parts of your book, I thought, the book A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict, was the chapter that talked about what happened in Finland when the Nazis came in and how the Finns initially responded, and then over the long term how they responded, the 10-point manifesto. So often people say, well, you know, if we hadn't done anything, Hitler would have ended up taking over the world, and that would have been the end of it, and we'd still have fascism. Number one, what do you say to that? And number two, we've got about a minute and a half here. We've got to take a break, and then on the other end of the break, you know, you can finish filling it in. But and number two, what, you know, I'd love you to tell our listeners what happened in Finland. Oh, was it Denmark? It was Denmark. Yes, I'm sorry. I always confuse those two countries. Denmark, yeah.
Well, what happened in Denmark is that after a while, through a variety of strikes and slowdowns, the effort by the Germans to extract economic value from their occupation just diminished and diminished, and the population became more and more emboldened to resist. And ultimately, this activity led to saving about several thousand Jews who were sent across the were sent out of the country surreptitiously. But at the end, the same dynamic that happened against the Germans, which seems impossible, has happened many other places. The Nazis couldn't regulate everybody. They needed the local police to stay in control, and that police refused to cooperate after a while.
Yeah.
And took greater and greater risks in that act of non-cooperation.
And that was actually spreading. I mean, you know, the Vichy French government was not entirely supported, shall we say, and on it goes. Anyway, let's get into that in just a little bit more in just a moment. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Dr. Peter Ackerman, co-author with Jack Duvall of A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict, and the and director of the International Center for Nonviolent Conflict. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say, an army of one?
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And just because he said that there was weapons hidden under pigsties over there, just because my boy may never make it home again, don't mean
And welcome back, Tom Hartman, 25 minutes after the hour. That's one of these anti-Bush parody songs, although, you'd have to run it quite a bit longer to get the whole point of it. Anyhow, we're talking here with Dr. Peter Ackerman, one of the world's leading authorities on nonviolent conflict, and the founding chair of the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict in Washington, D.C., the author with Jack Duvall of A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict. And Dr. Ackerman, you document all these extraordinary transformations, literally democratic transformations of nations around the world that have come about as a result of nonviolence, from India to the Philippines to Poland, for example, the Solidarity Movement. Have you ever seen a democratic institution, a democratic government come out of an invasion like we have done here in Iraq? I mean, isn't there a parallel there with World War II, for example?
Well, I'm really not expert enough to say. I would sort of answer your question with a slightly different premise. There's virtually no case in which there is an internal violent insurrection that's led to a democratic result.
Uh-huh. That's a very significant difference.
First of all, have been very rarely successful. In fact, we totally overestimate the successes, and we lionize, like Castro, the people who have been successful. But the successful ones tend to basically want to take over the power of those who they just succeeded.
Right.
The beauty of a civilian-based resistance movement is it requires a tremendous diffusion of participation from a civilian population, both demographically, old people, young people, rich, poor, women, men, and geographic diffusion throughout the entire country. I think also your listeners, and to be successful, so what happens is that when these are over and they are successful, they basically have enlisted the power of civil society, which basically reinforces the prospects for democracy.
Right. So
one of the things that your listeners might be interested in knowing is how many nonviolent conflicts are going on as we speak or have just succeeded. We just had a successful overthrow of a removal of Shevardnadze in Georgia, of Absalom Abija in Algeria. There's a movement going on in Armenia, Belarus, Burma, Cuba, Egypt, Hong Kong, as we've been reading about. There's a movement, nascent movement in Iran, in Moldova, in Nepal. There's active nonviolent campaigns going on in the Palestinian territories. Even small evidences of this in Saudi Arabia and Syria, most unlikely of places, an active nonviolent movement in Ukraine and in Venezuela, and of course in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And in one sense or another, each of these movements have recognized that they don't have a military option, and they still will not live with the circumstances that they are forced to live under, but they have to find another way to pressure the people who are in power. And so they're working and looking to find nonviolent, civilian-based techniques.
Strategic nonviolent. Strategically nonviolent, using very specific techniques that have been demonstrated for centuries to work. For
now,
millennia.
The idea that you just articulated, strategic, really also says another, makes another very important point, is that these tactics have to be used in combination. Just like in a violent conflict, you have various kinds of campaigns that link a variety of military tactics, these tactics, whether it's a strike, a boycott, a mass protest, and they just, not one thing works. It has to be accumulation of these kinds of pressures to succeed.
Yeah, well said. Dr. Peter Ackerman, thank you very much for being with us
thank
today.
You for having
and the author of A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict. Is there a website very quickly?
Yes, it's www.nonviolent-conflict.org.
Great. Thank you very much. Tom Hartman with you, 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run. Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. A bit of bumper music there, a parody of Chris Christopherson's Why Me? Why Me, George? For now, it's on Blue Canyon Satire by Jim Tur. 16 people were detained at Tiananmen Square today. 16 presumably pro-democracy protesters. This, of course, our big economic ally, China. On June 4th, 1998... The Chinese military, this day in 1998, the Chinese military assaulted thousands, killed hundreds, may have killed thousands, and we will never know. Yeah, but now people are back in Tiananmen Square, and reporters saw 16, this from USA Today, reporters saw 16 middle-aged men and women picked up Friday in the square in twos and threes and dragged into waiting police vans. In advance of the anniversary, Chinese authorities detained activists and relatives of people killed in 1989 or ordered them out of Beijing. On Friday, broadcasts, Friday being today, except it was today like, you know, 12 hours ago in Beijing, broadcasts of CNN to hotels and apartment compounds for foreigners in the Chinese capital were blocked out repeatedly when the network showed reports on the crackdown. Veterans of the protests commemorated the death with vigils, marches, and hunger strikes in Hong Kong, Washington, and Taipei, Taiwan. Thousands of people are showing up for a candlelight vigil, which is probably going on right now in Hong Kong. Friday night. It is now Friday night. In Washington, out in front of the Chinese embassy, there's a veteran of those demonstrations, a young man who was there in Tiananmen Square in 1989, who's been on a hunger strike since Tuesday in front of the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C. If you happen to be in the area, go by and give him some moral support. On Friday, the human-based, again, according to the Associated Press and USA Today, on Friday, the New York-based group Human Rights in China released a list of 25 people who it said are still imprisoned in Beijing for taking part in the protests. And China, but see, the protests, I don't remember who said it. There's a marvelous quote from, I believe, from like the 17th century. Might have been Rousseau, but it may be somebody more modern. I don't remember. What has been written in blood cannot be written over with ink. Or something close to that effect. You know, this is from memory. The events of June 4th, 1989 in Tiananmen Square will not be forgotten by the Chinese people. Nor by the world. And this internal, you know, if there is a hope for democracy in China, and I think that there is, frankly, I think that there's democracy, a hope for democracy all around the world. It, as Peter, our guest in the last half hour, mentioned, it's going to come from an internal democracy movement. This is what, you know, There was this 36-foot-tall papier-mâché statue of the they called it the Goddess of Liberty that these protesters were carried into Tiananmen Square on this day in 1989. And it was a replica of the Statue of Liberty. They were quoting Thomas Jefferson. George Bush talks about a war on terror and a war on evil, and we will win the war, we will vanquish the evildoers. And there's a lot of Americans who salute that. Say, yeah. Yeah, let's kill them. Kill even more of them. And yet the real war is a war of ideas. It just very simply boils down to that. And what the history of the world shows is that, number one, ideas can be extraordinarily contagious. And number two, when these contagious ideas spread, they change societies. And number three, that the nature of the contagious ideas can be either extraordinarily toxic, sick, twisted, destructive, ultimately, or very healthy. And what the last 200 years have demonstrated to us, and of course the tribal history of human beings, all of us have tribal ancestors. Most of us don't remember, you know, we don't have any family recollection, any collective memory of that time. But there are people, you know, here in North America even, all around the world, there are people who have indigenous roots or who are members of indigenous societies who remember tribal times when people lived in democracies, essentially. Collective decision-making. Sometimes even representative democracies, like the Iroquois Confederacy, that was a huge model for the United States of America. And this contagious idea of democracy is what we must be spreading around the world. The more that we go around the world in Bush's notion of it's God on our side and, you know, onward Christian soldiers, and we're going to kill them if they are with us or against us, the more you create your enemy. History just demonstrates this so clearly. Now, there are times, absolutely, there are times when, you know, your enemy comes to your home and attacks you. Germany declared war on us in World War II. Japan attacked us at Pearl Harbor, and you must respond. I am not advocating passivity here. But what I am suggesting very clearly, and this is why the analogy that George Bush tries to make, and he's trying to make it, you know, this week at Normandy, is not only wrong. I mean, you know, it's not only intellectually wrong. It's not only historically wrong. I mean, Condi Rice a couple days ago saying, you know, George Bush will be remembered as one of the great presidents like Churchill and Roosevelt. Well, Churchill, of course, wasn't a president; he was a prime minister. But in any case, she's wrong. It ain't going to be. I'm sorry. Iraq did not attack us. Yes, I know 60% of people who listen to faux news or get most of their news from right-wing talk radio believe that that's the case. They are misinformed. Iraq did not attack us. For that matter, Afghanistan didn't attack us. The Taliban didn't attack us. It was apparently... And this hasn't been, you know, really fully demonstrated. We haven't had the kind of investigation that happened after World War II. But it was apparently Osama bin Laden and his merry band. Okay, you want to grow them? Go after them with guns. You want to wipe them out? Go to the same people that they're appealing to, and say, We will offer you democracy instead of slavery. There's a reason why in Iran right now, the mullahs who are holding that country basically hostage because they have veto power over the parliament are increasingly in trouble. Why when reporters go into Iran over and over and over again, they come back saying, you know, the Iranians love the Americans. It's like one of the few countries in the Middle East where we're actually revered. Why? Because they want democracy. And the parliament and their president, they've stood up and passed democratic laws, and the constitution right now that has stood since the takeover, since, you know, the Shah fell at the end of the Carter administration, and the new constitution was written in the early first year of the Reagan administration, as we were budding up with them, as George Bush as vice president and the CIA were selling them weapons to pay them back for holding our hostages. That constitution says that parliament can go ahead and make all the laws it wants, but the church, the mullahs, gets to veto them if they don't like them. And the fact of the matter is right now the average Iranian doesn't like that. There is change in the air in Iran. And if we go in guns blazing, we are going to screw it up so bad. Because I'm telling you, if we just sit back and or do what we can to encourage the democracy movement there, without co-opting it, without turning it into, you know, some obvious CIA front group or something, if we can encourage the indigenous democracy movement, it will triumph. It has happened now in 81 nations around the world, fully democratic. More than 100 moving in that direction, and as Peter said, it's all these. So, you know, this is just straightforward stuff, and it really comes down to there's a human psychology aspect to this too. You know, one of the things that I'm reminded of is how one of the favorite talking points of right-wing talk radio is, the Democrats are just trying to buy your votes. They're trying to bribe you. That's why they want to give you welfare. They want to give you tax cuts. They want to give you mortgage deductions for your home. They want to give you Social Security. They want to give you Medicare. It's all bribery. They just want your votes. Well, actually, Mr. Bimbo, that's how democracy is supposed to work. We the people say to our elected representatives, you know, gee, this is this kind of society we'd like to live in. This is what we would like. And if we're willing to pay for it, then let's do it. Pretty straightforward. The problem is, of course, that in the last 20 years, since essentially the so-called Reagan Revolution, the con takeover of the American government, the United States government has not been listening to we the people. It's been listening to a few thousand multinational corporations. But this is this whole idea of saying what you want and getting it back. Let me just reduce this to the personal level for a moment and then take it back out to the national, because this is something that is so absolutely universal in human psychology, and people don't get it. They don't get the connection between the personal reality of it and the international and national reality of it, and it's a clue to the whole thing. I'll give you just a very personal example. Louise and I took a course in neurolinguistic program, NLP, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, something like that, down in Atlanta from a guy named Life Roland. He runs the NLP Center of Atlanta. It's basically kind of a psychology course. And Life, in the course of this course, this thing ran, you know, 6 months every weekend sort of thing. And in the course of this, at one point, and Louise and I at that point had been married for 15 years at least, I think. We've been married 31 or 32 years now. Anyhow, Life turned to me. And he said, Tom, how do you know when to know that you know that Louise really loves you? In other words, what is it that she does that gives you the certainty, the feeling of the certainty that she loves you? And I said, when she touches me. Because that's, you know, and now you can play psychobabble, right, and amateur shrink. Maybe it's because my mom rocked me a lot when I was a kid. Who knows what the deal is, but, you know, that does it for me. She can walk by, I'm sitting at the table, put her hand on my shoulder, and boom, I feel loved. So then he turns to Louise and says, Louise, how do you know when to know that you know that Tom loves you? And I'm sitting there waiting for her to say, oh, when he tells me he loves me, when he touches me, when he holds me, when we have sex, whatever, you know, something physical, because that's my stuff. And she says, when we sit in the morning, have coffee together, read the paper, and have, you know, a serious, meaningful conversation, whether it's about the events of the day or about, you know, what's going on in our life and our family. And I'm sitting there with my mouth open in shock, you know. You feel loved when we have coffee in the morning together and talk? And she's like, yeah, that's when I feel loved. And I said, well, what about when I touch you? And she's like, well, that's okay, but, you know, have coffee with me in the morning. And it literally changed our marriage, because after that night, we went home and said, okay, let's make a deal. I don't remember if I said it to her or she said it to me, but here's how it plays in my mind. I said, you know, you touch me more, I'll have coffee with you every morning. Because I didn't even drink coffee. You know, I was always trying to get out of these breakfast things that seemed so important to Louise. It's so straightforward. Then we went to our kids and we asked each one of our kids, how do you know when you're loved by us? And one of our kids said, you know, when you tell me that you love me. Another one of our kids said, when you take me out to breakfast. That was a shocker to me. Because this particular child had for years been harassing me. Why don't you take me out to breakfast? And I thought it was, you know, sibling rivalry. He was trying to show his sisters that they were, you know, he was more important, whatever. And no, he says, when you take me out to breakfast? And then our youngest said, when you teach me things, when I can ask questions and learn from you. And she's the one that ended up homeschooling with us. And I remember one time with Justin, our middle one, the one who wanted to go to breakfast, when he was here last Christmas. He'd been out, you know, been at the local bar with friends that evening. And 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, I woke him up. He had about 2 hours sleep. I said, hey, you want to go out for breakfast? Boom! He was out of bed and into the shower. I mean, you know, that was it. Right? And so ask what you want. And this is what, as a government, we need to be saying to our government, this is what we want. This is the kind of world in which we want to live. This is the kind of foreign policy we would like to have. These are the domestic policies we would like to have. This is the kind of economic policy we would like to have. We have a vision for America. We have seen it before. We have seen it here in the United States. We want it back. And we need to hold our politicians accountable for returning it to us. Tom Hartman with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Creatures in the deep ocean adapt to life in a dark and dangerous world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The middle zone of the deep ocean is a very dark place. Little sunlight penetrates to depths of 600 feet or more, and we would find it impossible to see anything down there. On the other hand, deep sea creatures are well suited for survival in this cold, dark world. Tracy Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution. He studies animals that live between 600 and 1,000 feet deep, and he says a lot of them can see in the dark.
The eyes of the animals down there, they're modified so that they can see any little available light. So they don't form a real good image, but their eyes are super, super sensitive. Their eyes are more sensitive than any instruments we have to measure light.
Sutton says good eyesight helps predators find their prey. Those other creatures have to take care not to be seen. Sutton says that's not easy because there's nothing to hide behind.
Most of these animals spend their entire lives without seeing a solid object. They don't see the bottom. They don't see the surface. They just float in this midwater zone where there's just nowhere to hide at all.
Since there's nowhere to hide, the creatures of the deep have tried to make themselves harder to see.
The fishes are jet black. Other things are completely transparent. And often when you catch them and you look in a trawl bucket, you can't tell that it's there until you pour it out and then you see, oh, there's lots of stuff in there. It was just transparent.
Sutton says most deep-sea animals are less than a foot long, but they have surprisingly big heads, teeth, and fangs. Food is scarce in the open water, and they need to be able to eat almost anything they can find. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So just because he wasn't really elected, just because that ballot count wasn't fair, just because him and all his friends are millionaires,
you want about 4 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you, back with you. This is such an important concept. This whole idea that the conservatives love to promulgate, and in fact it's a mantra on right wing radio and has been for 15 years, that when politicians provide programs to we the people, as a result of we the people saying to the politicians, you know, we'd like those programs. We would like to have a national health care system. We would like to have Social Security that we could actually retire on. We would like to have a social safety net so we don't have homeless people in the streets. I mean, it's just a quality of life issue, if not, you know, setting aside even morality. That we would like to have some certainty that our food is actually safe. We'd rather not have somebody who's the former head of the Cattlemen's Association as running the USDA's mad cow disease thing. Thank you very much. We'd rather not have former executives from polluting industries running the EPA. We'd rather, you know, we'd like to have fresh water that we can drink safely. It's uncontaminated. And the cons love to say, oh, this is those Democrats who vote for those programs that people want are just trying to buy votes. And I say, no, this is called democracy in action. And the antithesis, of course, is you know, the Tom DeLay technique of and the George Bush technique of having the huge multinational corporations coming and saying, you know, we'd like you to reduce the air pollution standards so we can add, you know, toss a little more pollution into the air, make a little more profit. Yeah, it may cause the change this year, 18,000 more deaths a year in the United States, but we'll be more profitable. And they say, okay, cool, we'll do that. That's the loss of democracy. That's the opposite of it. So it's about saying, this is our vision. This is what we want. You can do this with your boss. You know, this is in the workplace. Even this is appropriate. Go to your boss and say, "What is it that I do that makes you know that I've done a good job?" And then do more of it. Ask the question. If you're a boss, ask your employees. You know, what is it that I do that helps you know that this is what I want done? And of course, you can do it in your families, as I told you. And especially, we need to do it at the national level. We need to be communicating with our elected officials in a whole variety of ways. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, News Without Conflicts of Global Corporate Interests.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want to ask investors in his struggling casino empire about that. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own, his claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his Real Life Corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, you're Trumpness. You're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, "You're fired." This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber in F.A. You've got to see it. That's why Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules on how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
Thank you.
a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Friday afternoon, the 4th of June, 7 minutes past the hour, the third hour of our program. Our telephone number, 1-866. That's one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program. This news just in from the BorowitzReport.com. Bush on tenant, his faulty intelligence will be missed. Sudden resignation leaves gap in fake intelligence gathering. President Bush responded to CIA Director George Tenet's surprise resignation today, telling reporters at the White House, quote, his faulty intelligence will be missed, end quote. Mr. Tenet, whose tenure as the head of the spy agency was often shrouded in controversy, nevertheless received high marks from the president. George Bush said, quote, when it comes to collecting unsubstantiated shreds of fake information, there will never be anyone in the same league as Mr. George Tenet, end quote. Mr. Bush waxed nostalgic about Mr. Tenet's assertion that the evidence of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction was a slam dunk, calling that moment a milestone in the history of phony intelligence gathering. In the intelligence community, response to Mr. Tenet's decision to resign echoed the president's, with many fearing that his departure would leave a serious gap in the agency's ability to gather and disseminate completely fictitious intelligence. One agency official said, the next time we have to convince the American people we need to go to war, who's going to be there to dig up the flimsy, completely bogus case that has to be made? That's when you're really going to miss George Tenet. But just minutes after submitting his resignation, Mr. Tenet suddenly withdrew it, saying that his reason to resign had been made on the basis of faulty intelligence. My bad, Mr. Tenet said. George Bush said, it's great to have George Tenet back on board, welcoming the CIA director back in his old job. Whew, that was close, said he. That from Andy Borowitz, the BorowitzReport.com. The George Bush show, right? I mean, the George Bush show. As you
now,
know,
what am I gonna do?
Yeah, now what am I gonna do? Actually, the one I was the one I was looking for, I can't find. Anyhow, it's oh, here it is. Yes.
I know nothing. I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Our daily mislead. This from David Sirota. Claim. This is what George Bush said 3 days ago on camera. You've probably seen it on the news. Quote, speaking of Chalabi, right? Chalabi has been outed, some would say set up, who knows, by the administration as a double agent for Iran, who helped the neocons in the administration lie their way into getting Colin Powell to take a case for war to the United Nations. Apparently, he is seething about that. You can mess with anybody else's reputation in Washington, but be very careful of former, is he a four-star or a five-star general? Anyhow, the president has said, well, here is Chalabi, you know, he lied us into this thing and, you know, helped provide the intelligence, blah de blah de blah. And then Chalabi starts claiming, no, the CIA is out to get me, blah de blah de blah. And so George Bush goes on TV to try and make it clear that this is not my fault. You know, what was it that he said?
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, here's what George Bush said on the 1st of June, this 3 days ago. Quote, speaking of Chalabi, I haven't had any extensive conversations with Chalabi. I don't remember anybody walking into my office saying, Chalabi says it's this way, or that's the way it's going to be in Iraq. And then he added, I think maybe I met him over a rope line.
right? That's, you know, it's when you're walking along shaking people's hands. It's like that famous picture of Bill Clinton reaching across the rope line to hug Monica Lewinsky. Not the best metaphor, George. Anyhow, that's what he said. Basically, I don't know this guy. Well, oddly, on February 13th of this year, George Bush said something quite different. And here's the exact quote. They're not going to develop an Islamic extremist government in Iraq. And the reason I can say that is because I'm very aware of this basic law they're writing. They're not going to develop that because right here in the Oval Office, I sat down with Mr. Panacci and Mr. Chalabi and Al-Hakim, people from different parts of the country, and they have made that firm commitment. And 3 days ago, I don't remember anybody walking into my office. But back in February, oh no, everything's going to be fine. Chalabi sat here in the Oval Office and told me so. George Bush doesn't just have a problem with the truth. He has no relation with it at all, as far as I can tell. And it's scary. Company-paid health insurance for the state for retirees is vanishing. Oh, we did that, didn't we? This is where I wanted to go with that. This is the same thing. In order to match Bill Clinton's first-term job growth, the first term of the Clinton administration, in order to match that, George Bush right now would need to create 1,677,000 jobs per month, each month, through December. Just to match his father's economic record, which wasn't, you know, all that great. I mean, George Sr. lost the election on Clinton's internal campaign's slogan of "It's the economy, stupid." Just to match his father's record, W would need to create 547,000 jobs per month, each month through December. But what's really interesting is when you put it in the context of other presidents. And once again, here you hear Republicans and conservatives, including conservative Democrats. But let's make this partisan for just a moment. I mean, because there are two political parties. You can't ignore that or deny that. And there are times when I am in agreement with Republicans. There are times when I am in agreement with Democrats. And there are many times when I am in strong disagreement with both, as you well know. In any case, it's interesting to look at, we've talked before about the fact that if you go all the way back to the late 19th century, you find that whenever a Democrat is elected, the stock market goes up, and whenever a Republican is elected, the stock market goes down through the course of their presidency. It's just absolutely predictable. I had some friends when George W. got selected. I had some friends who had some money in the stock market, and I said, you know, I recommend you sell. And if John Kerry gets elected, even given the disaster that George W. has set up by running this country into so much debt. I mean, he has just created a train wreck of unprecedented proportions. If John Kerry gets elected, and particularly if either the House or the Senate, ideally the House goes Democratic, because that's where spending bills originate and taxation bills originate, then I would have some hope for the stock market again. But anyhow, here's the number of jobs that Bush would have to generate in order to catch up each month, every month. This isn't the total number of jobs between now and the election. This is the total number of jobs George Bush would have to create. Keep in mind, right now, the economy's so-called creating somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 to 300,000 jobs a month, which is just slightly below the replacement rate, that is the rate at which new people are coming into the job market. minus the number of people who are retiring. In other words, it's basically flat. And unemployment, you know, is basically flat. There's been a slight decrease in the unemployment statistics because so many people have been unemployed so long that they're no longer counted. They are now discouraged workers. But in order to match, for example, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in his third term when we were still in the Great Depression, George Bush would have to create 1,190,000 jobs per month, every month, between now and December. In order to match the Roosevelt-Truman administration, that is, you know, Roosevelt died halfway through his last term of office and Harry Truman became president. In order to match that, he would have to create 624,000. Now, that, of course, was the height of World War II. Still, George Bush would have to create 624,000 jobs per month, every month until the end of the year. To match the Truman administration, you know, after World War II, and that relative period of peace there between World War II and the Korean War, George Bush would have to create 870,000 jobs. Now, looking just at the Democrats, in order to match Kennedy Johnson, he'd have to, you know, the 3 years of Kennedy, first year of Johnson, he would have to create 938,000 jobs per month, every month, until the end of the year. In order to match Lyndon Johnson's record, his 4 years in office, George Bush would have to create 1,457,000 jobs per month. In order to match Jimmy Carter's record, he'd have to create 1,539,000 jobs per month, every month, for the next, you know, 6 months or however months. How many months is it from now to the election? Whatever that is. Until December, until the end of the year. In order to match Bill Clinton's first term, he'd have to create 1,677,000 jobs. In order to match Bill Clinton's second term, 1,658,000. Now, you noticed all of those Democrats were in the range of more or less a million or more jobs per month that George Bush would have to create in order to match them. The lowest was Truman's 870,000. You look at the Republicans, however, to match the Republicans, George Bush would only have to match Eisenhower's second term, for example, he'd only have to create 330,000 jobs. Nixon, 982,000. That's not bad. Nixon, Ford, 876,000. Reagan, 872,000 in his first term. Bush won, 547,000. Reagan's second term was really the high point for all the Republicans all that time, 1,500,000 jobs. But still, that doesn't come close to the 1,670,000 or 1,658,000 of Clinton or the, as you've heard. So, is it going to happen? No, it ain't going to happen. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The last hours of ancient sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Here's why. If you look back over the administrations going all the way back, I mean, we could go back to Hoover, of course, and Wilson, but, you know, we started with Roosevelt. If you look back over the administrations, you find that the Democratic administrations produce massively more jobs than the Republican administrations. And that's not including, by the way, The things like the Works Progress Administration, where Franklin Roosevelt was just using government money to put people to work. And the reason why has to do with a fundamental difference in philosophy between conservative economics and liberal economics. Very straightforward and very clean, very easily identified, very easily understood. This is no secret difference. And that is there's really two pieces to it. One part of it has to do with the idea of supply demand versus demand economics. And the other part of it has to do with, you know, what's the purpose of economics in our society? The purpose of, you know, why do we play the game of business? Is it so a few people can get rich? Or is it so that we can have a better society to live in and a few people can get rich? And the Democrats, by and large, and as you know, I have a lot of problems with a lot of Democrats on this. But the Democrats, by and large, have subscribed to that latter theory. Certainly the liberal Democrats. That the purpose of the game of business is, of course, to make money, and it must serve society. And in a nation, the society of that nation comes first. The con economics, the con economists have, you know, like Bush and whatnot, have been running around, he's not an economist, obviously, but have been running around saying, no, sorry, or Sowell, or Thomas Friedman. I mean, you know, read The Olive Tree versus the Lexus, or his new book on globalization and how it's good. I mean, it's just wrong. It's just plain old flat out wrong. There is a reason why countries have national borders, why they have national cultures, why they have their own governments. There are differences between countries. There are language differences. There are cultural differences. Perhaps most importantly, there are resource differences, intellectual resources, whole variety of different kinds of differences. It's just very, very clear. Anyhow, Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. I'll finish up this rant in a little bit. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Well, two things again. Let's see if I can get to both of them. First of all, so when I was telling my wife about your prediction for the stock market crash due to the outsized M3.
Well, it wasn't just the M3, actually.
Well, yeah, what is the rest of it?
Well, I don't have the paper in front. If you subscribe to the Elliott wave theory, and then you juxtapose that on it, there's two other wave theories, and then you juxtapose that on P/E ratios, and then you put on top of that what might happen if the housing bubble pops because interest rates go up, what you get is a disaster.
Yeah, and you know what you get for sure is what I think maybe that the markets are starting to see is that it's not the American century this next century. That because of the, you know, what you were just talking about, globalization, we can't keep our wages high.
Well, we could if we pulled out of GATT and NAFTA and went back with the way things were pre 1980. We certainly could. I mean, we did that for over 200 years in the United States.
Looking backwards.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking backwards to Thomas Jefferson. I'm sorry. I think both conservatives and liberals can look both backwards and forwards. There are lessons to be learned from history, Billy.
Yeah, obviously I'm not happy with the way things are going, and yet I just don't believe we can turn away from globalization, and maybe I'm just not keeping my brain open enough for that.
Well, let's talk about that a little more, and you said you've got a second point. Stick around over the break, and let's continue this conversation. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Some conflicting reports on the safety of cleanup crews working on the country's largest toxic waste removal project at the former Hanford Plutonium Processing Complex in Washington State. Two reports on the topic were released by the U.S. Department of Energy this week. One concludes that contractors in charge of the cleanup have not been criminally negligent in their treatment of workers. Charges that contractors fudged medical reports to downplay health problems among the cleanup crews could not be verified, even though the contractors had a financial incentive to keep their safety records clean. Yet the second DOE study says it's impossible to determine whether cleanup crews have been exposed to radioactive or otherwise toxic waste at levels above what's permissible by law and found some instances of questionable record keeping. In addition, the second report notes that the Hanford crews don't have adequate testing equipment to sufficiently check whether a space is safe before cleaning it.
On Wednesday, Jobs with Justice launched the first ever hearing of the newly created National Workers' Rights Board in Washington, D.C. The board has 52 members, including 15 members of Congress, who will work to intervene with employers and the public to help resolve situations that threaten workers' rights. The hearing highlighted two national unionization efforts, the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers' attempts to win collective bargaining rights for Comcast employees, and the Service Employees International Union's campaign to organize Wackenhut security officers. Shannon Kirkland, former Detroit Comcast maintenance technician and CWA organizer, testified at the hearing.
Comcast has a systematic corporate policy that denies workers' rights to union representation throughout the cable system.
The hearing also encouraged people to attend rallies throughout the country on June 19th, which has been designated as a National Healthcare Day of Action.
More trouble in the tech sector. America's largest manufacturer of computer hard drives, Seagate Technology, announces it's laying off close to 3,000 people by the end of the year. That's a 7% cut in Seagate's workforce. But the company says executing these cuts now should guarantee a profit for shareholders when it releases its newest quarterly report next month. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. China is certainly in growth mode, but is the communist country growing a workers' paradise? Those in China's booming construction industry would answer no. It is common practice for construction workers to go unpaid for up to a year or more. The government itself estimates some $12 billion in wages is being illegally held from workers. Not that the pay is anything to celebrate. Many Chinese construction workers only make around $1,000 a year and have no health benefits or insurance.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it took a little time, but I guess you finally learned that promises.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour. We are talking with Billy in California. Hey, Billy, who called, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. You are welcome to call. Billy, before we continue with this, let me just share with you something that you may find interesting.
Sure.
And first of all, I should say, I don't think that this is a conservative or liberal issue. I really don't. In fact, I'm on the same side of this issue as Pat Buchanan.
Exactly. That's okay. Why it's interesting.
Yeah. This, I have in front of me the biography of Tench Coxe, T-E-N-C-H-E-C-O-X-E. Most people have never heard of Tench Coxe. Tench Coxe was one of the most influential men during the era of the American Revolution. He was originally a Tory. He was a businessman. He was a small businessman. He was never, you know, super rich. He was like, you know, the equivalent today of an entrepreneur who runs a company with a dozen employees and makes $100,000 a year kind of thing. You know, that was his gig. And he started several businesses up and down the East Coast. He had a few failures, but he was and he opposed the revolution initially, as so many colonists did, as particularly those in the business community, because they thought it would be bad for business. And then
The people always who have the power oppose a change in power.
Sure, of course. And after the revolution, however, he embraced it aggressively, became very good friends. He had known Ben Franklin for years and years, became very good friends with Jefferson and several of the other founders, Madison in particular, and got very active, largely through Franklin's advocacy in Pennsylvania politics.
Another successful small businessman.
Exactly, yeah. And in September of 1885, he proposed a law in Pennsylvania. Now, he was not a legislator. He was, in fact, in 1784, he created, quote, a Chamber of Commerce for the state of Pennsylvania, end quote. That was the name of it. It wasn't the chamber. He created the first Chamber of Commerce in the United States. I mean, this is one of America's first, you know, successful small businessmen, entrepreneurs. Well, not one of our first. I mean, there were many. But, you know, he created the first Chamber of Commerce in the United States, Tench Coxe.
Explains why the Chamber of Commerce has such an archaic name, like Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, there you go. It goes back to 1784. Now, keep in mind, 1784 was 3 years before the Constitution was ratified. We were still operating under Articles of Confederation. We were still technically at war war with England. And in September of 1785, he proposed a Pennsylvania law, which was later adopted as in 1789 at the federal level. But he, in 1785, was adopted in Pennsylvania, in New York and Massachusetts a year later in 1786. And here's the name of the act. It's called An Act to Encourage and Protect the Manufacturers of This State. That's the title. And his biography notes, the Pennsylvania measure imposed specific duties on a long list of enumerated articles, ad valorem rates on others, additional duties on rum imported in foreign bottoms, and a levy of 7 shillings and 6 pence, quote, upon every ton of shipping belonging in whole or in part to any foreign nation or state whatsoever, except those having treaties with the United States, end quote. Now, why did he do this? Well, it goes on to say, although conceding that it, you know, this is that it, now quoting Cox, it is not in our interest, perhaps, to manufacture articles produced more cheaply elsewhere, end quote, Cox defended the retaliatory features of the Pennsylvania law on the grounds that, quote, they will lead us to encourage such domestic manufacturers as are perfectly in our power, end quote. America's, quote, own interests must be our principal rule, he wrote in April of 1786, adding, in pursuing them, moderation with regard to other powers must be kept in view. In other words, this was the beginning of tariffs in the United States. And Tench Cox and the Early Republic by Jacob E. Cook is the book, and it's a fascinating look at colonial America from the viewpoint of business.
Tom, let me respond with two things. First of all, on some level, because I'm a little bit of a liberal do-gooder, I believe that we owe it to the world's people to actually help them climb out of the mud and to help let them participate in the great success that is the industrial and information revolutions.
Okay, let's just take that one at a time, okay?
Let me go one more thing. I do understand that we have a big enough economy that we could sort of turn in and just do it all ourselves and survive just fine. And then we'd have China lobbing nuclear missiles at us, probably, because they couldn't get in through the economic way, which is a way to create a middle class out of all the world.
Well, see, both of your assumptions, I would say that there are huge holes in both of those assumptions.
I'll bet.
Yeah. The first assumption, the first thing that you said was, repeat it again. I'm not making notes here.
I understand that we need
to help the rest of the world,
right? Import jobs. Isn't it sort of great that these people can climb out of the mud and become not a fourth and third world countries, but, you know, can have enough money that they can have a water system that's clean in a place like India?
Okay, there's two problems with that. The first is that they are now dependent upon our economy to stay out of the mud.
Our economy is a pretty strong driver. We can have a few hangers on.
Yeah, that's what they thought in Africa when they depended upon the British Empire.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they thought in the Congo when they depended on the Belgian Empire. Number one, to say to another country, we're going to do you a great favor, we're going to help pull you out of the mud, and we're going to do it in a way that's going to make you dependent upon us. Number one is, if not racist, at least culturist.
But that's not. That's not really what's behind it. You know.
But that's what's behind that argument, Billy. It's these poor people. We must help them by giving them some of our jobs. These poor people. And so.
No. Wait a minute. That's my attitude because I'm a liberal. I'm not a businessman. But the business people, let's say a company like Intel, when Intel takes some of its business and does it in China. It works for everybody in a sense that the company wants to sell things to the Chinese, so they don't mind if the Chinese make some of the stuff. And if a Chinese guy is able to buy himself a car someday, that's not a horrible thing. It can be a cooperative.
Okay, which brings us to the second flaw in your logic. The first flaw, the do-gooder flaw that Thomas Friedman is running around flogging right now, which is that we have an obligation to bring the world up to our standard of living. First of all, number one, implicit in it is this culturist, you know, and in many cases racist assumption, in my opinion, of, we have to, you know,
reach down. It's not racist to
want
them to be rich enough to afford medicine and clean water. That's not racist.
It is to assume that the only way they're going to get it is by us helping them.
It absolutely is.
Let's take the charged words out of it. It's arrogant.
I think it goes both ways.
It's absolutely arrogant. And here's why it doesn't work.
I'll tell you why it's not arrogant. Because if they work for me cheaper, I appreciate that. It's both ways. They've helped me to make my product cheaper, and I've helped them. I don't understand why that's not a hand-in-hand, a non-arrogant way of working together.
And they are now dependent on you in another country, in another culture.
And we on them.
And that is, you know, okay, so in your do-gooder context, then that's a bad thing.
It is?
What, you own them?
No, we're both dependent upon each other.
No, you're not, because you can always bring those jobs back here.
Yeah, and they can always
try
to make that product without us. Cheaper and sell it, you know, and therefore gain markets.
Yeah, and in many cases they're doing that, and we're helping export the technology to create that, which is a whole other side effect. But that's beside the point. But then the second place where this argument really falls apart, and this is a really important conversation, by the way, the second place where this argument really falls apart is the idea that in a national economy can only grow if it's connected to the economy of another country that's larger and more powerful. The reality, Billy, is that every nation has its own internal set of resources. They have natural resources in the nature of minerals.
No company has a complete set of resources.
No. Let me finish. I said country.
Country. No country is what
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And, in fact, that's what Adam Smith wrote about
China
in 1776.
China might need copper from Australia.
Sure. And China should be able to buy copper from Australia.
Absolutely.
But that's a whole different thing from what we're talking about. I mean, that's what Adam Smith was talking about in 1776. That's sort of what David Ricardo was talking about when he talked about comparative advantage. But the point that I'm making is that when a country grows its economy internally and indigenously, for example, in Bangladesh, there was a guy who had worked in the banking system. I'm forgetting his name right now. It's been a couple of years since I read his story. He's very, very well known in circles.
His name won't help the story.
In the circles of people who do gooders, you know, people who do international relief work. I haven't been in Bangladesh, but I've seen his activities in India. What he did was he created a bank, again, the name of it escapes me, where the average loan was like somewhere between $3 and $15.
Just to get new businesses started.
And the loans were given mostly to women.
Yeah.
And he created
really impressed with that,
he
way.
Created more prosperity in Bangladesh than any other event in history. Now that is growing an economy within a country, using the resources of the country, using the people of the country, consistent with the culture of the country, not trying to turn them into consumers of Coca-Cola and American TV, allowing, and it's an entirely internal and organic process, and that is the appropriate way that we should be helping the world.
Tom, there might be more than one appropriate way to do it. I'm a guy who sort of believes in lots of ways to solve a problem.
Yeah, well, you know, I see the microbank system works really well. Instead, we've done the macro bank. We go in with the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, and we say to the richest people in the country, here, we'll give you $1 billion, build a dam.
The best thing anybody can do to build a country is actually educate their women. Now, you know, just make sure they go to school is almost the best thing you can do.
That is a vitally important thing. But even before you educate them, you have to give them equal rights, and then the education will follow. I mean, but nonetheless, back to just the pure economic stuff, the bottom line is that it does not, number one, it does not help us being we, the people of the United States, when we export our jobs to India. And number two, it doesn't help India because what they are doing is they are creating an economy that's dependent upon the survival of our economy. And if our economy goes in the tank, their economy goes in the tank. You know, Japan experienced this.
Which inevitably will go in the tank.
Well, no, hang on just a second.
And there's no jobs for people who used to do manufacturing.
You know, I used to do business in Japan back in the 70s, and we were importing products. We were importing anti-radiation screen shields from computers back in the 1978, a company
making
that...
good money doing that?
Maybe $15,000-$20,000 a year when all was said and done. But it was, you know, it was a little mail order business. We ran ads in the computer magazines. Me and my friend in New York, Jerry Schneiderman, my business partner, he's been my best friend for 30 years now. In fact, I'm going to see him this weekend. Anyhow, we were bringing these things in. And the only way that you could do business in Japan, because they had figured this out, there's a saying in Japan, when America sneezes, Japan catches the cold. And by by that time, it was when America sneezes, Japan catches pneumonia. And the only way that we could do business in Japan, if we wanted to have any kind of manufacturing there or anything like that, was to have a partner. You had to have anything that you did in Japan had to be 51% Japanese owned. And
yeah,
China has those kind of rules right now.
You know, let's look at Japan.
What happens?
Japan people are people who are held hostage to incredibly high prices for almost everything they buy.
And they have an incredibly high standard of living. Have you been to Japan lately, Billy?
They've been in a recession for 20 years.
And their recession is something that 90% of the people in the United States who earn a living would die for.
Really?
Honest to God, I have, you know, I've probably been to Japan 50 times, and the last time I was there was just 4 or 5 years ago. You know, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Their recession, you know, they have jobs.
I paid $150 for a steak dinner. I don't want to do that ever again.
You would have no problem paying $150 for a steak dinner if you were making a salary that made it easy.
Yeah.
And of course, the prices in the hotels for Americans who show up, I mean, that has more to do with the difference in interest rates and things like that than it does to do with the local economy, because locals know where they can get a meal for $2, and it's a good meal. But the point
is... What I was amazed by was, for example, in Thailand... the price that I was able to buy a hotel room compared with what they were being sold hotel rooms in Japan, and the Japanese people had no access, basically, to buy in Thailand, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, in part,
so
that had to do with...
they were getting ripped off by their own people while maintaining, like you say, an internal business circle.
Yeah, in part, that had to do with the collapse of the Thai economy. I mean, you know, I was in Thailand in the early 80s when it was very expensive to get a hotel room in Thailand. Then after the crash, you know, that George Soros helped bring about, it was very cheap and on. But anyhow,
what's wrong with this? I just want to ask you this question.
Okay, and then I got to move because we got two more callers.
Exactly. My wife asked me this question when I told her you expected a market crash. She wanted to know where the Hartmans invest their money presently.
I'd rather not say.
Okay.
Frankly, we don't have that much money to invest right now.
And
the majority of our money is invested in this radio program right now, which is a small business. So I'll leave you with
and
that.
I assume you own some Vermont real estate.
Yeah, we own our house. Yeah. Thank you, Billy. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi, Tom. One of the things that I noticed about Bush lately is I was reading a thing, Capitol Hill's Blues, which on the Internet, that caught my eye. What they were talking about is erratic behavior, which I know you've already talked about.
Yeah.
But it said that he was spending more time trying to on doing the ads against Kerry, to run against Kerry, and micromanaging the ads, the political campaign ads, and then he totally ignored an important economic council meeting, and that kind of says why the economy's going down the tubes. It's because the priorities of this president is not for the economy. There was a guy from some talking head from the Republican Party, one of the top ones, was on one of the MSNBC shows a couple days ago, and I saw him, and they were talking about importing all our jobs, exporting them all overseas to India.
Right.
And his excuse for doing that was that, well, if they improve their middle class, then they'll be able to buy our high-end products, and therefore eventually that money will come back to the United States.
But they won't. They'll just start making their own high-end products, as Billy pointed out.
Exactly. But they're trying to sell that.
Yeah, oh, I know. These cons have got all kinds of, you know, tricks. The bottom line is that exporting American jobs, to use Lou Dobbs' phrase, and he's a real warrior on this. I really, you know, I disagree with him. He is openly Republican, and I disagree with him about a lot of things, but I'm so glad he's raising this issue on a regular basis. Exporting American jobs benefits multinational corporations and ultimately screws individuals in all countries. I mean, ultimately, everybody, the middle class ceases to exist. There's this fundamental reality that there are 6 billion humans in the world, half of them living on less than $2 a day. And if we really wanted to globalize the economy, our average standard of living would have to go down to somewhere around the neighborhood of $150 to $200 a year in income for you and for me and everybody else if we wanted to have a truly global economy. That's the direction these guys are moving, and it's just going to kill us. Thanks for the call, Ann. I appreciate it. We got to move on.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The eastern United States is the scene of one of the largest insect events in the world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cicadas are big brown bugs that spend most of their life underground. Some species emerge every year to reproduce. Others arrive in cycles that run several years. The largest group of all, known as Brood 10, comes up from underground only once every 17 years. When they arrive, everyone knows about it, and this is their year. Mike Raup is an entomologist at the University of Maryland who studies the Brood 10 insects. He says these cicadas are about an inch and a half long, and they're known for their huge populations.
We hear estimates anywhere from 100,000 to 1.5 million per acre. So these are enormous densities, and these are very large insects for those kinds of densities.
The range of the Brood 10 cicadas extends south from New Jersey to Georgia and as far west as Illinois. Raup says the 17 years they spend underground makes a lot of sense. No predator will live long enough to remember these insects and plan for their return, and Raup says coming out in huge numbers has its own benefits.
It becomes a safety in numbers game. By emerging in huge, huge numbers in any given location, the cicadas simply are far too abundant for any predator to consume them all.
Raup says predators do eat them, and the list of predators includes skunks and squirrels, fish, turtles, snakes, and birds. But the big brown bugs will still manage to produce billions of offspring. They'll be the generation of Brood 10 cicadas that will arrive 17 years from now. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, you're next. What's up?
I'd like to first pose something for us to ponder, then deal with something that Billy said. Given that this is the anniversary of Tiananmen Square about this time.
Today, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like us to all think about, given the view of the world about the U.S. right now, do you think they would build the Statue of Liberty in Tiananmen Square if it happened today?
I honestly don't know.
I kind of doubt they would be looking at the U.S. as the bastion of freedom anymore.
And isn't that a tragedy?
It could be almost no worse tragedy.
This is why I think that this administration is not only destructive to America, they're not only destroying our middle class, it's not only toxic to us and we the people, but it is toxic to the whole, to democracy around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, your second point.
Yeah, and as far as us helping other people, one is we have to be very aware of what we, first of all, consider like a less advanced or a primitive society. Our ways have often hurt societies that have been in stasis for thousands of years.
Well, that's my point. That whole philosophy, going all the way back to Manifest Destiny, is the iron fist inside the velvet glove.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Peggy Friedman put it really well. He was saying, he was into like the Peace Corps. He said, I went over to a third world country to teach people who've been farming for thousands of years how to farm.
Yeah, there you go.
And when I was in the South Pacific once, I was talking to a Peace Corps worker that was teaching the islanders how to fish again because our ways had taught them how to eat fish from cans.
Right. And if we, by the way, want to help people in need, how about the 40 million uninsured Americans? How about the 30, 40, 50 million Americans who don't know where their next meal is going to come, or who are living within 1 week or 1 month of absolute economic disaster? What about them if we want to be do-gooders and help, the world? Charity starts at home is the old saying.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good points. Always great to hear from you. Makes me crazy when I hear these cons do this stuff. It's just incredible. Louise, thank you for producing the program today. I do appreciate it. Thank you to Brad Walrod for our music. Shelby for RadioPower.org for our web stream. And Ben at White Rose Society for our archives, along with Michael Toth. And for the archives at TomHartman.com. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thank you to you for listening. Happy Friday. Shabbat Shalom. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.TomHartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.